Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have, as usual, an important show, but this one I'm really looking forward to because this is a timely show that speaks about something that we all need to actually understand, and that's transhumanism, which is being bandied about as the next thing, and it's a reset of not only our economy, but of ourselves. And I wanted to have someone come on who could speak about this from a personal and a knowledgeable standpoint, not just pat answers, but someone who thinks about it. And today we're going to speak with Mr. Wesley Smith. He's a lawyer, an award-winning author, and he's the host of Humanize podcast. He's also the chair of the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. In May of 2004, he began his work in bioethics, and he was named one of the nation's premier experts in bioengineering by the National Journal. In 2008, the Human Life Foundation named him a great defender of life for his work against assisted suicide and euthanasia. He's left a full-time practice in law in 1985 to pursue a career in writing and public advocacy. He's the author or co-author of 14 books, and he's a regular contributor to the National Review Online's blog, The Corner, where he focuses on issues that impact on human life and dignity. His work also appears regularly in First Things, Epoch Times, American Spectator, and other publications. He's often called upon by members of legislative and executive branches of government to give advice on issues within his fields of expertise. He's testified as an expert witness in front of federal and state legislative committees and has counseled government leaders internationally about matters of mutual concern. He's an international lecturer, public speaker, and he's appeared at political, university, medical, legal, disability rights, bioethics, religious industry, and community gatherings across the world. So Mr. Smith has a wealth of knowledge and can speak in detail and depth, and I think with eloquence, about what we're going to speak about today, and that's transhumanism. So, Mr. Smith, thank you so much for joining me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you, Dr. George, and hello to your listeners.
You know, let's get started. I think transhumanism seems to be the next wave of things that are hip and now. And I want to start off my question with, if it's so awesome, why is it being used or being brought out in such a deceptive way? I mean, we're being told that it's, as a Christian, it's something that we should want because it's what, almost like it's what God has ordained. It's almost that's the level that they're trying to pawn this off on us as. And I want to start off with that. As a Christian, is it something that we should even consider?
Well, it depends on which transhumanists are talking. Most transhumanists are atheists and are, you know, quite open about that. And it's certainly a materialistic world movement. It's a materialistic social movement. There are a few, relatively few, transhumanists who claim to be Christian transhumanists, which is an oxymoron. You can no more be a Christian transhumanist than you can be a Christian Buddhist or a Christian Muslim. These are just incompatible worldviews. I think if people really want to learn the truth about transhumanism, having people who claim to be Christian transhumanists describe it, I think, doesn't get to the bottom of what transhumanist movement is really about. You have to go to the primary sources. And I would recommend to people who don't want to, you know, really highbrow view, but somebody who writes in a more colloquial and popular way, is Zoltán István, Zoltán István, who's probably the most prominent popularizer of transhumanism. He's very clear that this is materialism, that it seeks to create immortality, not in the eternal sense of eternal life that Christians believe, but here in the material world.
That's really well said. And the fact that, is it that they're trying to bring us into this atheist mindset? It's very world dominated, earth related. I mean, earth is now considered to be more important than humans in that system. Is this the same Gaia kind of mindset, but expanded to try to pull people in?
Oh, that's an interesting point. You know, other things that are happening at the same time as transhumanism, like the Gaia hypothesis that says that Earth is a living entity. There's the radical environmental nature rights movement that is actually succeeding in creating, quote, rights, close quote, for nature, which we can talk about if you'd like. Mm-hmm. Transhumanism has a different goal. Its goal is what it calls H+, meaning more than human. The idea here is that human beings are not good enough. And so what transhumanists wish to do is create what they call a post-human future, meaning they want to recreate human beings into something else. Eugenics, it's pure eugenics. And recreate human beings into more than we are now. But not by, for example, improving technology so that our abilities improve or our performances improve, but by actually changing the nature of our species. Their first goal is immortality. Now, understand, it seems to me that if one becomes an atheist or is a pure materialist and you think that all there is, I say all there is news, weather, and sports, meaning all there is what you can see, taste, and measure, that we're all nothing but carbon molecules, well, that leads to a lot of hopelessness, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Because there's nothing beyond death except obliteration. And life isn't even really anything except a chemical reaction that that perceives itself, I suppose, as existing. Well, that leads to nihilism. And one of the things that transhumanism seeks to do is fill that hole where God used to be. It seeks to create hope with the idea that one can attain immortality. Perhaps not eternal life in the sense that forever and ever, beyond what we can measure, but certainly indefinite life. That they believe, like in Ponce de Leon, the Fountain of Youth, right? Mm-hmm. They believe that technology, it's a technology worshiping enterprise, that technology will be able to reach a point called the singularity, in which the improvements in capacities of artificial intelligence and other technologies will become so magnified that there will be a crescendo of unstoppable changes that will lead to corporeal eternal life, if you will. Just for an example, one of the major emphases that transhumanists make is that they will be able to upload their minds into computers, and so they can live indefinitely in the cyberspace, perhaps even blending their consciousnesses with other transhumanists. Well, I poke them in a good-natured way, but I want people to understand that's not reality. Let's assume that you could actually take your mind, which is not, in my view, just a meat, you know, our brains are not just meat machines. But let's leave that aside for a second. You could take your mind and create a software program so that if a computer had a stimulus that the Dr. George software would react as you would, right? Mm-hmm. Let's assume you could do that, which I don't think you can ever do that, but let's assume you could, because, you know, we're more than just mind. I mean, we have physical, like if you fall in love, there's not only the mental aspect, there's the emotional aspect. There's the physical changes in your system, the adrenaline that might shoot, and so forth. So they're really reducing life into something less than it actually is. But let's assume you could actually do that. As I tell them, look, that software program would not be you. It would be a software program that would mimic your reactions. You would still be you, or if you were dead, you would still be dead. It's not eternal life. It's not anything but a software program, if you could do that. Mm-hmm. Another idea they have is, okay, well, let's cut off my head today if I die and chirogenically freeze it. And then later when we can attach human minds to computers or AI machines, then we can bring you back. Well, okay, good luck with that. I think a frozen head's going to be a frozen head. Another approach they have, which I think is potentially really exploitive if you could do it in terms of the technology, is to make human clones of yourself and use these clones as sources of new organs and new tissues and kind of repair kits. Now, the problem with that is that human cloning has already been accomplished. They have created human cloned embryos and brought them, kept them going for a week or two. They did not try to implant them to bring them to birth or gestate them into the fetal stage. But it's quite possible, just like Dolly the sheep eventually was born, which was a clone, that someday you could actually have human clones born or human clones gestating in artificial wombs. Not yet, but perhaps someday. So the idea that you would create another human being for the purpose of exploiting it for its parts is, to me, profoundly wrong and immoral, because a human cloned embryo and human cloned fetus would be a human fetus and a human embryo, right? Mm-hmm. A human cloned baby would be a human baby. So these are the things that they talk about, and they actually have a lot of symposia. They write books and so forth. So that's the first goal of transhumanism, a form of immortality. The second goal is personal recreationism. Before the immortality stuff started, back when I started following transhumanism 15 or 20 years ago or so, this was actually the primary goal. And now it's we'd call it a secondary goal. And the idea is that they want to make themselves extraordinary without doing anything, no effort. In other words, if we could tweak a gene, or if we could use a brain implant, or if we could find some means of changing our physicality so that I'd have the strength of Superman, or I'd have the eyesight of a hawk, I could recreate myself into the image that I want. And it's a totally solipsistic idea. And often what transhumanists want is to improve intelligence. Because to transhumanists, many of them, intelligence is the highest human value. And I always respond by saying, wait a second, I think love is the highest human value. And in fact, you rarely hear or see transhumanists talk about love, except perhaps in the carnal sense. But it is about this kind of self-obsession to make oneself better, but not actually doing the work that might have to build character, to exercise or whatever it might be, to improve yourself. And of course, the idea of if I want to grow a tail, I can grow a tail, and I can become part man, part bat, whatever it might be, is incredibly solipsistic, and basically almost a denial of community.
I think that's a great synopsis of it, an overview. And it lacks soul, it lacks depth. And when we come back, I want to really explore that a little bit further, because I think now I have a better feeling of what it is as opposed to what they try to make us believe it is. On that note, let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Wesley Smith. And before the break, we were talking about the tenets, the foundation of transhumanism. It's not, it's interesting how they use words. And like, humanism is supposed to be about humanity, when in actuality, it's not. And it's about destroying humanity. And this Christian bent to it, it's the antithesis of what God is, because if God made us in his image, then we don't need all these other things to help us be better. We are perfect in our imperfect way, right? But our pursuit is to be one with God and to love each other and to actually do things on earth that help people. I don't hear anything about, you're right, about helping people. It's all about the individual and themselves and their pursuits.
It's me. Yeah, it's me, I.
Yeah.
And it also lacks the concept of, for example, sin and repentance and humility, the need for divine forgiveness, which is certainly a Christian dogma, the value of redemptive suffering and eternal salvation. None of that is in transhumanism because it's a materialistic mindset. Now, some who call themselves Christian transhumanists, which, as I said, you know, you can't be a Christian transhumanist any more than a Christian Muslim because it's a totally different belief system. But they will say things that like this is our working with God to make this world a perfect, you know, a better place. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not what God said if you're a Christian in terms of this world. We're supposed to be shepherds and good carers of the world, certainly. But this world is not the goal if you're a Christian.
Exactly.
Eternal life in what comes next is the goal. And so the this idea of the singularity we discussed in the last segment it's almost akin to the idea of the second coming. You know, it's an eschatological look into the future, only instead of looking to God in the term of an eschatological event, transhumanists look to technology. And whatever Jesus might have stood for, he would never have said your salvation comes from technology.
No, I mean, that's the opposite, isn't it? It's about faith. Yeah. It's about God. So how can man, you're actually elevating man to God's level. That in itself.
That's the idea. Yeah. And you're remaking human beings in our own image. And you know, that's just, it's a utopian mindset. I even sometimes, when I'm talking with religious audiences like this one, I'll say it's really a Tower of Babel mindset.
Everybody, the many into one, but that one is, it's imperfect. Trying to be God when you're actually not. So, I mean, from a Christian, from when you have a conversation with these guys and you bring out the fact that it's a false paradigm. What kind of pushback do you get? And it's a very broad question, but can they actually defend themselves, defend their thesis? I never find that they really can when you question.
Well, if they're calling themselves Christian transhumanists, it's very difficult. But the materialists, you know, Zoltan Isfan, as I said, I've interviewed him on my Humanized podcast, by the way. So if people are really interested in hearing it from the horse's mouth, if you will, go to humanize.today and look up one of the interviews I did with Zoltan Isfan. And he and I get along. I mean, I've been jousting with him for years. He's a very nice man. I mean, I like him as a human being, you know, but I completely disagree with him. But if you really want to see how radical this is, listen to my interview with Zoltan Isfan on humanize.today. He doesn't pull his punches. He doesn't pretend to be what he's not. And he's also kind of funny. For example, in 2016, he ran for president on the Transhumanist Party ticket, but he got international headlines, including in the UK and Europe and throughout the United States, because he redesigned a bus and made it look like a coffin, and he ran on the plank that he was going to defeat death. Well, the media are suckers for that kind of thing. And so he got a lot of attention, and I think he got a lot of adherence. But again, if you're an atheist or you're a materialist, and you think that with death comes utter obliteration and there's no hope, you're going to be attracted perhaps to a movement that says, well, there is hope in technology, that technology will be your savior. It's just not Christian.
No. And if you really extrapolate it out to its natural end, it's not about life in any form, because, I mean, I've seen lots of connections between eugenics, euthanasia, all these things, because life doesn't really matter. Then if you're not, you know, pulling your weight, or you're someone who they consider to be important, then your life is forfeit. I mean, we see this from the cradle to grave pretty much, don't we?
Yes. And there is something called the Christian Transhumanist Association. They have a website. I don't know how big they are. But they basically, this is, I took a quote for a piece I wrote in First Things about this movement, as a, you know, in terms of Christian transhumanism. Christians can, quote, grow into our identity as humans made in the image of God. Well, that makes no sense. Christians embrace spiritual growth through prayer, through fasting, acts of asceticism, not superficial technological improvements, you know, and improving our and changing our physicality. Christians don't view the ill and disabled as somehow lesser beings either. The Christian faith calls us to show compassion towards others rather than being obsessed with self. We're commanded to feed the hungry, invite the stranger in, clothe the naked, and visit the sick and imprisoned. Because by doing those things, what did he say? By doing those acts of mercy to the least among us, we do them unto Christ. Mm-hmm. That is completely different from the transhumanist purpose.
How do they get to the point that they can just negate the tenets of the gospel? I mean, it's really pretty. It's opposite of what you've learned as a Christian. I mean, are they saying that God made technology, so therefore, I mean, how do they make that jump over that chasm? It's pretty huge to me.
That with technology, we're kind of like partnering with God in making a better world, that kind of thing.
Wow.
But again, the idea of Christian transhumanism is a subset of the larger movement, which is, for the most part, the leading lights of the movement are very clear that it's an atheistic or at least a materialistic approach.
Wow. Well, let's think about that and let's take our second break. You're Living in the Solution.
If you miss Living in Solution, you can catch it on DrElenaGeorge.com, YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, and a host of multimedia platforms. You can follow her on Positive Solutions on Telegram and Living in Solution on Facebook. Subscribe and share it with your friends.
Welcome back to Living a Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Wesley Smith. And can you tell us the actual website and how we reach it?
Yeah, thank you. Just go to humanize, humanize.today. Humanize.today. That'll bring you to the podcast and my blog. If you go into the podcast, obviously there are more than just the Zoltan Isfan interview, but that would be worth, if people are interested in transhumanism, listening to. It's about 1 hour of him explaining this whole thing. There's also, by the way, for Christians, a tremendous interview that just knocked me out of my chair with Johnny Erickson Tata, who is the quadriplegic Christian apologist and disability rights activist who gives wheelchairs to the third world. And Johnny and Friends is her organization. I spoke to her for 30 minutes. And for people who are Christians, it is one of the most powerful Christian testimonies I've ever heard.
Wow. Well, people definitely need to do that. You know, we've come a long way from a society from being God-centered to where we are now. I mean, you have... on your blog, you mentioned the nuns. What are those people? The people who stop believing in Christianity, in church? I mean, how are they growing in such a number? Because I'm seeing there's numbers of people who are less affiliated with any religion at all. Is that part of how this transhumanism movement is being fed?
Well, those are the people who the transhumanists are approaching. Mm-hmm. By nun, it's not N-U-N, it's N-O-N-E. And nuns are people, and particularly growing among young people, are people who reject faith and have no faith. Some are agnostic, some are atheist. You know, some, I suppose, pursue New Age or whatever it might be. And of course, this is a fertile field for transhumanism, because when you reject the concept of more beyond what's not in this material world, you're actually, you know, if you've given up on the hope of Christianity, or even if, you know, for Buddhists, there's reincarnation and so forth. If you've given up the idea that there's more to life than what we experience here, and if you give up on the idea that how you live here will matter after you're gone, then there's a major vacuum that is left. And with society secularizing, and I believe we're moving from a post-Christian world to an anti-Christian world, at least in the West, being Christian is now going to be something that comes at a cost, as opposed to at one point, let's say 100 years ago, where it was actually the expectation. And so a lot of people who might not have actually been Christians would at least go through the motions because that was the reigning cultural paradigm. We now see anti-Christianity on the rise. And so if somebody doesn't believe and someone thinks that Christianity is, I forgot how the Bible puts it, but is a mockery or is ridiculous to the Greek, right? Mm-hmm. And that there's a phrase there that St. Paul has that escapes me for the moment. Then you can see where this might be attractive. But again, first principles matter. And there's a difference between transhumanism and Christianity. They could not be more contradictory. Transhumanism is materialistic. Christianity is theistic. Transhumanism is utopian, and utopianism never works well because it says that the ends justify the means, and that means transhumanism. In fact, some of the things that you'll hear Zoltan Ispan say, if you listen to that interview, are authoritarian because, the ends justify the means. Christianity sees the world as fallen, and that's more realistic. Transhumanism perceives immortality as something that can be achieved by men. Obviously, Christianity identifies eternal salvation as the mercy of a loving God. And so for different eschatologies, different value systems, and so forth. So one can be a Christian and as a secondary matter, really believe in harnessing technology to improve the world. Those are not mutually exclusive at all. But one cannot be a Christian transhumanist, because that's a worldview. Believing in technology, let's say an exoskeleton, so that people with profound disabilities like quadriplegia can actually walk again, which is being experimented on, that's not a mutually exclusive issue. That is trying to help people who are otherwise suffering. But Christian transhumanism is a belief system as opposed to using technology. And they just can't occupy the same space.
No, not when the central tenet is faith in God as opposed to man. I mean, that's just right there. It's just, it can't be. Now, there's something called the Transhumanist Bill of Rights, which, if you can explain that, it seems, it makes no sense to me, but I mean, how you give something that's not real rights,
the transhumanists are always, they get together and they don't just say, I wish we were, eternal and leave it at that. They're actually planning for this future world. So I've just turned to the Transhumanist Bill of Rights, which can be accessed on the internet. And here's just a couple of them. As used in this Transhumanist Bill of Rights, the term sentient entities encompasses, one, human beings, including genetically modified human beings. We haven't gotten into that, but transhumanists also want to genetically engineer their progeny so that the progeny have the attributes that they think are important, which of course takes away free will from the progeny, because you're forcing them by the sheer power of genetics to have certain attributes when that's just to me, a usurpation of the role of a parent. Mm-hmm. Two, cyborgs. Three, digital intelligences. Four, intellectually enhanced, previously non-sapient animals. So one of the things that transhumanists really believe in is they're going to somehow use these technologies to eliminate suffering, including in the animal world. And I attended a transhumanist conference where somebody actually said, we're going to take all the predators and put them up into cyberspace, and then all of the herbivores won't have to suffer predation. So they're talking about taking non-sapient animals and elevating their capacities so that they are rational, which would be wrong. Any species of plant or animal which has been enhanced to possess the capacity for intelligent thought. And so this is the kind of never-never land that these people live in. And they spend their time obsessing about, because otherwise there would be this idea of hopelessness again. Article 1, all sentient entities are entitled to pursue any and all rights within this document to the degree that they deem desirable. I mean, they put a lot of effort into this. And the idea is that they're going to be able to engineer themselves and engage in all kinds of these technological approaches, and that to impede them would be the same thing as impeding freedom of speech. And they say, for example, all sentient entities shall be granted equal and total access to any universal right to life. All sentient entities are created free and equal in dignity and rights, but they're also supporting of abortion.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an issue here, and the issue is rebellion.
Wow.
It's a rebellion against the natural order.
But it doesn't even make sense on any level. And you said something before the break, which I think is another tenet that separates Christianity from this system. And that's the free will that we all have to make our choices as Christians versus this totalitarian bent. You know, if they were just to stay amongst themselves and do this, it wouldn't be a problem. But their thing is, we need to have everybody under the control. We need to control the entire thing. It's a bunch of control freaks, but without any soul associated with it. It's like they don't even know exactly what they want. They just want to control everything. And
right. It's utopian. And they think that, I poke at them because I love them. And I think it's harmful to themselves. This kind of futile quest for immortality or for being exceptional without actually engaging in any kind of real effort to improve one's own capacities or you know, practicing the virtues to become a better human being. It's an idea that if I can just push the right button, pull the right lever, I will be an extraordinary entity. That's not how life works.
No. And I think one of the things that you mentioned before is about working at something. It's like you want to just take a shortcut without any real thought involved, without consequences.
Right.
There doesn't seem to be any conversation about consequences. Is there?
No, they don't talk about consequences except of not pursuing transhumanism, because the consequence in their view, at least the people who are mainstream, which are materialists, is obliteration after death. And old age, I mean, you know, age is something we all, and I'm certainly learning, have to deal with as we grow older. And they look at aging as unnatural, when it, of course, is quite the opposite.
How interesting. So, from what you're describing, it's based in fear as opposed
to
based in love. It's a complete different mindset. So
absolutely.
That
yeah.
whole brain of empathy turns off, doesn't it? When you're living in fear, it's about you first, everybody second.
That's interesting. One of the things, again, this idea of engineering intelligence, one of the contrasts I make when I say, no, it isn't intelligence that is most important for humans, it's love. I will then discuss people with Down syndrome. People with Down syndrome are the gentlest, sweetest, most loving people you'll ever meet. I mean, if you want to have a model of the kind of human being that would make for a better world, people with Down syndrome would be it. I'm speaking generally, obviously, but they're very forgiving. They're very caring. And we're wiping them off the face of the earth through eugenic abortion, mm-hmm. because they have developmental disabilities. But in terms of that attribute of love and forgiveness, people with Down syndrome are remarkable.
It's interesting. The reality versus the rhetoric, that's what people really need to pay attention to, that you can put values on people based on something really arbitrary, not about humanity at all or empathy. That's really toxic, quite frankly. On that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. Again, we're speaking with Mr. Wesley Smith, and Mr. Smith, how can we get your books? What's the best way to get them?
Oh, thank you. All my books are available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. Sometimes they're still in bookstores, but they're certainly available in those formats. If you want to read what I write, follow me on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, at the Wesley J. Smith, follow me on Facebook. And of course, go to the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. If you go to humanize.today, most of my articles are posted, and of course, the podcasts. If you go into First Things, I have an archive there. National Review, I have an archive. The Epoch Times, I have an archive. And the Washington Examiner, I used to write for the Weekly Standard before it went belly up. So there are articles at the Washington Examiner, which took over the archive from the Weekly Standard. I have some old articles there, particularly about the Terri Schiavo case, which I covered very extensively.
Well, thank you for giving that information. You know, while you were speaking, it just also dawned on me that I wonder, you know, I talked about how it must be a feeling of fear. What about hatred? Now, and I mean this in the way that you must feel pretty bad about yourself that you have to somehow create a reason to get a leg up on people and make yourself better. Is there some aspect of hating what God created in order to try to ruin it?
I think, I don't know if they're trying to, they don't believe God created it. But beyond that, there is a certain self-loathing because human beings are inadequate, meaning we do not have the kind of attributes that they think would be better. And life is over too quickly. it reminds me of an old Woody Allen joke, and the joke goes like this. Agnes says to Florence, you know, I went to that new restaurant, and Florence says, how was it? And Agnes says, awful. The food was terrible and such small portions. So that reminds me of transhumanism. Life is inadequate. We do not have the attributes that they would like to see as human beings. We're not special enough. We don't have enough strength. We don't have enough intelligence, and we die too quickly. And I think it's a pretty sad movement myself.
It certainly seems very one-dimensional and limited. And there's no happiness in this. It's anybody, they reach a point. Well, I mean, they say it's a utopia, but I told a guest a couple of weeks ago that every time we talk about or watch a futuristic movie or book, it's always dystopic. It's never good. And the whole thing is go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I think that's a good point. When you try to do it yourself, it's going to lead to dystopia or fallen. And there's one of this idea of giving thanks for whatever is, which is hard for Christians. I mean, you know, when you're going through a difficult time, it's hard to give thanks. But there's none of that. There is only the striving to be better. And of course, we all want to improve ourselves. But in the Christian faith, you do it through the spiritual disciplines. In the transhumanist faith, because that's what it is, you do it through trying to improve machines, artificial intelligence, computers, and so forth. And it's a very mechanistic view of life that I don't share.
Well, this, we've seen AI pretty much, you know, integrate itself into our society from a healthcare perspective. We have this happening with disease, how we treat disease, how we write prescriptions, the whole nine yards. We see it in social media, all these bots. I mean, it's making decisions in also defense industry, you name it. They're now something over humans that's creating our society or running it.
I don't think we should be afraid of technology per se. I mean, we should view it as we would as what it really is, which is, you know, a tool. But we should not say that we're going to give up our we're going to give up our autonomy. Control. We're going to give up our ability to make the ultimate decision to machines. I mean, you know, there are machines that do surgeries that are, you know, that do better job than human beings, than surgeons. That's fine. That's a tool. We're not giving up our agency. That was the term I was looking for. We're not giving up our agency. But the idea that artificial intelligence should be deemed a person with rights, which is a transhumanist concept, is ridiculous. An artificial intelligent machine is very valuable in the sense of financially, but it has no more moral value than a broken toaster. It's a machine. It's not alive. It's a tool. It's no different in that sense than a hammer, except it's more sophisticated.
Now, is that the leap that transhumanists are making? They're making it sentient. I think it's Saudi Arabia, or one of the countries, who's given a passport to an AI or some sort of android, whatever. And that's a step too far, in my opinion. So at some point, if we, everything that, you know, at least from a sci-fi standpoint, it's always whatever it is wants to be free and wants to be basically, I wouldn't say lorded over as a bad way to put it, but control. So if you cede your control, or if this AI system gets out of control and you lose control of it, what happens then? You know, that to me, well, that, if it's kind of scary.
There are even some transhumanists who worry about that. A guy named Nick Bostrom, who I believe is at Cambridge, he might be at Oxford. He's one of the actually originators of this movement, and he worries about AI getting out of control. And then you'll have others who say, well, it's inevitable that they'll take over. Well, nothing's inevitable unless we allow it to happen. You know, we're not just flotsam and jetsam on the currents. We're not like jellyfish that go where the currents take us. We have free will, and we can decide to create high-tech machines and computers that help humankind and make for a better life on this planet and help clean up the environment and this kind of thing. That's one thing, and I support that. But the other is, if you give up agency, if you give up free will, if you turn over the most important decisions that can be made to machines and take out the human element, then you're looking for trouble. There's no question.
I mean,
how does a machine express empathy?
It doesn't.
How does a machine express love and even experience love? It can't.
No. Well, we've also seen these bots or whatever on the internet. You know, they let these AIs interact with humans on the internet, and invariably it has to be shut down because it becomes racist, sexist, totally negative. It seems like it just runs towards a dialogue that's not positive. Imagine that.
Well,
on
AI,
every level.
An AI, of course, starts with program that humans put in.
Mm-hmm. So it's
and
flawed.
Then the idea for AI is that they will begin to self-program. Well, it's still going to be limited by the programming humans put in terms of parameters and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So again, a lot of these online bots and so forth, they were actually programmed to cause mischief.
Okay.
You know, and to troll people and to create chaos. I mean, there are, there's evil in this world, and there are forces in this world that seek to cause chaos, interfere with freedom, and cause division. And we can't let that happen either.
Well, how do we pull ourselves back from this? I mean, it seems like it's happening parallel to
humility.
Well, okay.
Seems to me we need to engage the virtue of humility. That we should aim at loving each other. I mean, if you're a Christian, the formula is there. Love each other and love your God with all your mind, body, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. Who's my neighbor? Well, what did Christ say? The world, everyone's our neighbor.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Even our enemy is our neighbor. And so for Christians, that, you know, we need to be aware of what we're talking about, but you can't just allow yourself to be carried away into a anger and a kind of a belligerence, because that's not helpful.
It's not, but you know, you can't sit back and let it happen either. You have to.
No, right.
Choice is a choice, right?
Right. Well, no, you don't. No choice. You stand up for what's right. But you do it in a way that's loving.
The way the society goes, I think that's, it's a skill, isn't it? But if you're living in the tenets of Christ's love, it's not hard. And that's what we all need to do.
Yeah, but staying in that spot, that's what's hard. You got to work at it. It doesn't just happen. You have to work it.
That's for sure. No question on that one. I know time goes so quickly, but I think, you know, we've just scratched the surface, but I hope people really understand where we're going, potentially where we're being pushed to go. And you need to, you know, think about it and make conscious decisions. And as you said before, you being in that space, that God space of gratitude, of loving, not letting people define you. I think that also is a Christian, as Christians, we do everybody, whether we're doctors or whatever, we just need to define ourselves, not let people define us. I think people do that way too much based on what you look like, and where you're from. It's just silly.
And compassion means to suffer with. It is our job to suffer with people, help people, mitigate suffering, but you can't eliminate it.
No.
If you think you can eliminate suffering, you're engaging in a utopian enterprise, and utopianism always leads to authoritarianism. It leads to discrimination. It leads to oppression. We need to avoid utopianism. That's not the best way forward. And Christianity is not a utopian mindset at all.
No, it's work, but it's wonderful work. On the last few minutes that we have, seconds, how can we, again, follow your podcast, get your books, and read your blog?
Well, thanks. Again, my books are all available online, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and so forth, Wesley J. Smith. Follow me on Twitter at the Wesley J. Smith, because I post all my articles on Twitter. I also do some commentary, you know, like anybody on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. And the Discovery Institute is humanized.today for my materials. And then Discovery Institute generally is discovery.org.
Mr. Smith, thank you so much for joining me today. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I can't wait to have you back on.
Thank you, Dr. George. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and God bless. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk Events.